Don't miss this special festival kickoff at the Hobby Center with Sergio Mendez and Casa Samba on Friday, April 12th. Get tickets now for the concert, plus special pre- and post-concert VIP events available at ifest.org. Proceeds benefit Houston Festival Foundation education programs. Presented in part by KPFT Houston.
You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings and welcome to tonight's edition of Technology Bites here on whatever location you're listening from. That's where we are being broadcast to. Thank you.
Clear, concise, and not at all muddy. Thank you, Flicted. Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groovehouse.
All right. Well, welcome to the show. We're glad you could tune in.
Glad you're here. Hi, Jay.
I feel like I got a Muppet in the studio.
Pluto. It's a Muppet in the studio. Pluto.
Hi.
Hi, Jay.
It's going to be one of those nights.
I'm actually kind of glad for that. I hope it is one of those nights because I have no enthusiasm.
Good. Phone software is dead. We're going to wing it.
Buffalo wing it.
Blue cheese dressing.
You can pass notes.
You can pass notes.
Pass gas.
So when's the geek gathering?
It's the first Friday that falls on a
Speaking
Friday
of geek gathering
of the month.
All I know is that we're as far away from a geek gathering as we get.
Boo.
As far as Fridays go.
As far as days go.
Because we could have one of those weird 5-week months.
There we go.
Where, yeah, throw it out of kilter.
As long as it doesn't fall on a Saturday.
Right.
Okay, we're using fuzzy math to talk about the geek gathering. This is not to be confused with using math to discuss the furry gathering.
That's fuzzy with a pH.
I got it. All right. Well, we had a geek gathering. Yay! A few days ago. And it was awesome. It was actually, it was quite good.
We had it last Friday, which was the first Friday.
It was Friday, yes.
It may or may not have been on a Friday that was a numbered Friday in a month, but it was a good geek gathering.
What was interesting was that there was a big turnout early, that there were a lot of people there right away, which was pretty cool.
Well, it was good. What I liked about it was that there was an art opening going on that I think, because we were there, made it look like an event to be at, because there didn't seem to be a lot of people there for the art opening. Our people dominated. I mean, and the weather was perfect. Mm-hmm. The weather was just absolutely perfect. It was just comfortable to be outside, sitting at the tables in the parking lot, the food truck, and all that good. Did you order from the food truck this time?
No, because you did the table. No. Actually, I got there, but the food truck doesn't come till 8. I can't
hold on that long.
I can't. Right.
Dwight's going to starve.
So I went over to Lazy Vral and got some yummy fried rice. It was quite good.
I did the food truck. It was good.
I did too. My first time.
I might have a small snack beforehand. But you know, and I could have held out if the art folks had cheese, but there was no cheese this time. I was sorely disappointed.
You were sorely disappointed?
Sorely disappointed.
All right.
It's cheesed off.
Cheese on, cheese off. All right. Wow. Hi, Heather. So we have, what are you doing? Flicked his motorcycle partner in the studio with us tonight.
Does she have a name tag?
She does have a name tag or an expiration date.
Oh, she expires soon. That's what it is. Uh-oh.
All right, so if you want to learn more about the show, you can check it out at geekradio.com. That is our official website, geekradio.com. There you can grab the podcast. You can see pictures of us in the studio and other stuff like that. You can also use the contact form if you want to contact us with questions that you don't feel comfortable answering or asking on the phone. You can also use the built-in Java IRC client to join us on IRC. If you want to use your own client, that's irc.cuckoo.com, and the channel is Tech Bytes. But if you don't want to use your own client, we have that available for you, and should be relatively free of exploits, Java style. And the phone number, 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air with us tonight, we will be taking your calls after we do the info shot, which we have downloaded from the internets, that was produced in San Antonio by Peter Hughes. And we are now going to do that. We hopefully have got the audio quality issues worked out. Flicted is experiencing that. If anybody knows the answer to why this might be, Flicted played the MP3 file through iTunes and it sounded like crap, but he plays it through his web browser. It sounds good. Why is that? If you have the answer to that question, you can contact us.
Somebody call Technology Bytes.
Somebody call that radio show. Because we are perplexed. All right, so let's do the info shot. Take it away, info shot. Ooh, nice. I just knew we could count on that.
The needle's dirty. Clean the needle. Put the needle on the record.
Blow on it.
Blow on it.
Wow. That's even worse than it's ever been. That's just...
Why is it so hard?
Sad trombone.
You know, why...
It doesn't have to be.
Why is it that...
Oh, it can't be that bad.
Did you hear it?
Hello?
That's cool. Play that for 15 minutes. And that's the news. Thank you, Peter.
What the?
Yeah.
Well,
maybe it's because
you guys disappeared for about 30 seconds.
Maybe it's because I've got Peter on audio in addition to that trying to play on audio, and it's too much
audio.
You can't cross the streams.
Can't cross the streams. So
too much Peter.
Hey-o. All right.
Well, try hanging me up and then just call me back when the
news is over.
When the news is over.
Okay.
All right. Well, you know, if we ever get this right, the show will come to a grinding halt, and not in a good way. All right. We're going to now info shot take two. Nope.
It was playing fine in the lobby. Everybody's come over, and we'll set it up in the lobby, and we'll play it there.
Pete doesn't even know this. His news isn't even going on because he's hung up
he's
on
hung up, right.
Well, he could be listening to the stream.
Yeah.
So if you unplug whatever wiring you have on there, does it still plays to your computer fine?
Just put the mic up next to the speaker.
We may have to do that. No, that's fine. So did you change your line out thing again by chance? Do you know that little switch?
He's in the zone right now.
I know, he's in the zone. I'm just trying
to... How about that geek gathering?
How about that geek gathering? Was awesome.
That thing was pretty cool.
Well, you know, the important thing is that the info shot takes a lot of effort, apparently, to have... to bring to you. I want you to appreciate that come fundraiser.
Yeah, people are going to want to pay for this.
This is the kind of quality technology radio that's worth paying for.
You know, but the thing is, I can play YouTube videos.
All right, Pete, upload the news via YouTube, and then we'll play it through there.
It's your codec.
So while before this started, I've got my Twitter feed going here, and there's little bits of news flowing through, and there's one interesting. I know Pete won't have this because it's just happened, but this is just kind of an astonishing statistic. In the National Association of Broadcasters convention is going on in Las Vegas right now, and so all these CEOs from cable companies and wireless companies are talking. The CEO of Verizon had a speech today, and he said, and this just kind of amazes me, that 50% of Verizon's wireless traffic, like for phones, is now video.
Really?
Yes.
Well, if you look at, you know, how many Ks in a single web page load versus video, it's not that surprising.
Right.
So if you watch even, I'd say, you know, an hour, that probably is as much web traffic as you could generate in an entire month. So I see tons of people,
true.
You know, especially
that's
commuting
true.
Or, you know, in class or, you know, waiting for something to happen. And they look down and they just, you know, YouTube videos. You know, it's kind of ubiquitous now, I think.
Yes. Well, I watch a lot of video on my phone at the gym, and I see other people have started doing that.
Mm-hmm.
They're on treadmills and ellipticals and so forth. And, you know, people are watching video.
Wow.
Yay. Well, that's something. No.
It's better.
It's better.
It's still in a can, though.
It's still in a can.
It sounds like it's injected directly into my
skull. Can you put that into cue on your headphones? There you go. All right, so what were you talking about before we were so rudely interrupted?
No. So you see enough people doing it that you can... But 50%, that's just kind of... That means, and it's growing. I mean, it's growing.
Well, there's nothing else out there except for, like, maybe file sharing, which most people don't really do for their phones, that consumes that much bandwidth. I think that's going to be, like, the biggest... eater of bandwidth with everything, yeah. Which is like 128K,
right.
Maybe 192K.
And there's photos. People are sharing photos.
And some of those are large, but most of them are web content, right. Also not very large.
You know. There's maps, and there's apps. And
not a lot of data, though. The video, just it's a
right.
Big amount of data. Are they going to cap it? Are they saying, I mean, people are staying under their limits for the most part.
Most of the newer plans have changed so that either you're not when you hit a limit, you're charged mm-hmm. per gigabyte above that. You know, nobody's getting cut off, or you get throttled. Because when you're throttled, you can't watch video very well anyway. So, and I'm more and more fascinated by this because we talked about this last week that I have indeed cut my cord.
When was the actual day?
Last Friday, I called AT&T. And I said, I'm out of here. And, you know, they, very nice, very polite, but they kept coming at me. You know, we got this package for $34. We got this, you know, why are you doing this? And when he asked why, I then went into intense detail about the price that I was cord cutting, a lot more than he probably wanted to hear. But I wanted them to hear, because, you know, they record it. They mm-hmm. listen to all this stuff. So I wanted him to know why I was doing this and what was going on. And you know, when I was done, we had just paid our bill, apparently. We were on auto pay, and they're going to send us a full refund for what you just paid, and they turned it off last Friday. And so far, no pain.
It may be working now.
All right.
But it may still sound like crap. But it seemed like it might be working, but not through iTunes.
All right.
You want me to try it?
Yeah, let's try the info shot again here on Technology Bites.
Take three.
Take three.
Technology Bites info shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
There was a lot of excitement on Twitters and the social media this week because the Huffington Post put Austin on its overrated list and said you should go to Houston instead. But karma has a way of balancing out. Google announced that Austin is going to be the next Google Fiber City, that they'll be getting the gigabit internet that Kansas City has received recently. They said that the choice of products will be similar to Kansas City, gigabit internet or gigabit internet plus Google Fiber TV service with 200 channels, 200 HD channels. They're working out the pricing details, but expect it to be roughly similar to Kansas City, which I believe is around $120 a month for the kind of full-on gigabit internet and TV. There's also, in Kansas City, if you pay the construction fee to connect up, you get 5 megabits per second for free for 7 years on your house. I believe that in Kansas also, that one's about $300. Google is also planning to connect many public institutions as they build out in Austin. Schools, hospitals, community centers will get gigabit internet for no charge. This is all in an early stage, but it should be starting around mid-2014. So maybe you have to decide, maybe Austin, the balance has tipped a little their way. Of course, I would love for them to offer it in Houston, where it could be very usable, say at KPFT for bandwidth. Now here's an odd one for this week. You know, usually servers don't make the news. You know, there's not a lot on the web server or the data center front that rises to the level of, you know, reporting it to share it with people, because it's just, you know, a lot of boxes all together in one place for a data center. Two interesting stories on that. Intel has been chosen by Hewlett-Packard to, they're going to use Intel Atom processors for their new ultra energy efficient server architecture. It's called the ProLiant Moonshot server. It's intended to save a ton of money and space and cost for places for data centers, because it's gotten to the point where, you know, the energy costs to run a data center are tremendous. Basically, it's a 6-watt server. Moonshot's biggest selling point is delivering less energy use, less space, less cost. They say that it takes 89% less energy than traditional servers, 80% less space. Another piece from Intel on the server front is that they're pushing a new reference design that they're going to put out for a kind of disaggregated rack. So right now servers basically have, you know, you have the rack and you have a bunch of servers individually stacked in there. Each server has its own power supply, processor, memory, all that stuff. And if you want to upgrade a processor, you pull out one of the machines out of the rack and put in a new machine with the new processor. The idea with that Intel is pushing is where you separate these things. So you might have a drawer of processors, or a single deal of processors, a thing of memory, a thing of the power supplies all in one place, so you can concentrate the cooling on the processors and the power supplies and not on, you know, inefficiently cooling the whole thing. This is going to rely on silicon photonics using light to move huge amounts of data at very high speed over a thin optical fiber rather than electric signals over a copper cable. Intel's prototype can move data at up to 100 gigabits per second, a speed that allows components to work together even when they're not really close together. Finally, while we're on Intel, they do Thunderbolt. They're responsible for the Thunderbolt interface, which is like USB, but not. compared to USB 3, you know, Thunderbolt is much faster already than the 5 gigabits per second you get with USB 3.0. So it's got efficiency that way. And the next generation coming out next year is supposed to give you 20 gigs per second data transfer, which is pretty stout. Apparently it has enough bandwidth. The code name for this one for next year is called Falcon Ridge. And it has enough bandwidth to display a 4K image and transfer files at the same time. And now Apple stuff, sort of. Well, first a T-Mobile thing. If you have an iPhone 4 or a 4S and you trade it in, they will sell you an iPhone 5 with no down payment, and they give you a $120 credit that they apply to the monthly payment for the phone. In other Apple news, this one is in the back and forth with Samsung. Apple, the chips, the A-series chips that are in iPads and iPhones have been being made by Samsung. And apparently the farther generation, the A7, I think we're on the A6 chips right now. The A7 chips, now Apple has apparently dumped Samsung and has switched to another company. A spokesperson for Samsung, at one of their parts suppliers, said that Apple's been cutting the use of Samsung displays, and now the back and forth between Samsung and Apple has expanded to chips. Apparently, Samsung is looking to fill in the gap left by Apple with not buying chips from them with production of its own chips for Galaxy phones and tablets. The other Samsung piece is there was a leak on a new notebook from them that sounded kind of interesting. It's a 15.6-inch touchscreen notebook running Windows 8, which should be coming here to the States in the near future. It's got a quad-core Intel Core i7 processor with 8 gigs of RAM, 1 terabyte hard drive for storage, and a AMD Radeon GPU, according to SammyHub. So it's got all the other usual stuff, HDMI ports and that kind of thing. It has a backlit keyboard and around 8 hours of battery life, and they say it should be about $1,200. But the interesting thing to me is with it having a touch screen. And you wonder kind of with the iPad and the other tablets that everybody's using now and iPhones, why there haven't been more touch screen laptops. But apparently they're more on the way. Then the last couple quick hits. Dell is now offering Ubuntu on their Alienware X51 gaming machines. That's kind of cool. Before it didn't have an Ubuntu version. According to Dell, the Ubuntu build of its Alienware X51 has a starting price around $600. There's 4 base configurations, so you can adjust it to be whatever it is you need if you're wanting to game on Ubuntu. Dell's Mark Obi said in a blog that the operating system loads quickly and can handle multiple programs at the same time. They have a workplace switcher, which is an example of multitasking done well, according to Dell. Gives you the option to split the screen into multiple work areas and is easy to switch between. The OS also comes with a software center to download free open source apps so that you can install stuff to use on it. You can install Steam on it. Of course, that'd be the way to game. Although many games are not yet supported, including most of the AAA releases, the list that is available for Ubuntu is continuing to grow and has classics like Team Fortress 2 and Serious Sam. The highlight for the Steam integration is that it supports big picture mode. The versatility and small size of the X51 make it easy to disconnect the system from the monitor and connect it to a TV. So cool for, you know, huzzah for open source. And if you're into gaming and it meets your needs, you have that option. And finally, this one, I hope we see more of these. This is out for the iPad. There's a company called Panic that makes some really good software. They have a coding platform called Coda. Most of their stuff is for Macs, but they have they've got this new app that just came out today called Status Board. And what it does is it turns the screen on your iPad into a dashboard to let you see the different information you want to put together in one shot. So instead of having to open, you know, a weather app to see that and a stock market app to see some other thing, you can put all this stuff together. The deal is it gives you an at-a-glance overview of the time, weather, your calendar, your email, Twitter timeline if you want, RSS feeds. Plus, there's three pro options to turn your JSON or CSV data into graphs or tables. So you can pull stuff in and display it. You can even design your own panels using HTML. So you can have this one screen and have a high density of information. They came up with it because they built a dashboard in their headquarters that they run on big LCD TVs to display like their current sales and to let people in the company know what's going on at a glance. And they've put that out for the iPad. It's like $10. And hopefully somebody needs to knock this off for Android too. If Panic software doesn't do it, somebody else should, because it gives you a nice start screen to you know, to keep track of the stuff that's important to you. And that's the news.
All right. Finally, the news. All right. Phone number here is 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air with us tonight, we will be taking your calls and answering your questions and addressing your concerns. So if you want to give us a ring. Now, the phone system, in keeping with tonight's episode of Phil, doesn't work. We can't see the calls that Groovehouse is screening for. So I can't even see if the phone is ringing or not.
Right. It is ringing right now. So
which
I will
awesome.
Answer it, and so I'll write it on a piece of paper,
and then we'll
just blindly send it to you.
So Groovehouse will take the calls and screen them, get them ready to be on the air, and then he will tell us who's up and next and so forth. So the best way to do this would be for you to go ahead and call in and get in the queue. Get ready, get lined up, and then we could just, you know, get a list of callers that want to be on the air, and we will take those calls and we will deal with them. 713-526-5738 as Groovehouse takes the first call. What's that, Pete? Are you there?
Did that work better?
It worked better, except when it flicked and first tried to play it, all we got was again. So I don't know what he did to fix that or get the feed out. It sounds a little tin canny. It sounds like there's a little phase going on in the record. I don't know if it's in the recording or if it's in the playback. But when it comes on the air, I think the background music may be causing some kind of audio phase going in and out. It doesn't sound quite right. So we might want to try doing it as a clean, just read without the background. And we're also hoping if we could get it a little earlier, burn it to a CD or a DVD, a CD, so that we can try playing it on the CD player. It sounded okay. It wasn't great. It wasn't like when you try to do it over the Skype. So it definitely didn't break up or anything. You could hear the content. So still going to have to spend another 18 years hammering out the details to try to get this show on track. Speaking of 18, we have a birthday coming up in June, July.
And it is 18.
Mm-hmm. And it is 18. Yes, that's why I made the 18 reference.
So we should have the party and then all go vote.
Why isn't our Skype better? I thought we're supposed to have this much bigger, better pipe to the internet now.
Do we?
We were supposed to as of a couple of weeks ago.
Oh. Have you tried running speedtest.net?
Well, I mean, is it the Skype that's causing the problem, or is it your laptop, or is it the audio interface that Pete's using to talk to Skype? I mean, do we know actually what's causing the problem or for the way it sounds? I mean, I noticed there's a little echo in there. I don't know if that's necessarily caused by the bandwidth. I don't know. Groovehouse?
Yes.
Well, I know I've got 50 megabits per second on this, man. I tested that during the news.
Well, your sound, like, when you talk, right now, there's this kind of artifact trailer coming behind you. It's not a true echo. It's a distorted echo. So when you talk, it's relatively clear, but behind that is like audio
bubbles.
Like bubbles, audio tracers. So there's, I don't know if that's because of the headset. I guess you're using a headset. So I don't know if that's called.
No, I have a USB microphone and I'm wearing headphones.
Okay. I don't know, but there's something in the background. If you go back and maybe if you go back and listen to yourself on the podcast and see if you can identify what that sound is.
He sounds like he's coming over long-range comms on the bridge of the Star Trek ship, like the Enterprise, like awesome. In the 70s. You know, that background, like
it's
an
on
SOS
purpose.
Mayday,
that's
mayday,
what I meant
help.
To say. We're doing this on purpose. We're beaming him. All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Do we have a call in the queue that wants to be on the air with us?
We do.
All right. Who is it? What do they want?
All right. First up on the show, we're going to speak with Gary.
Gary, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hello. I have a hardware question about my mouse functionality, but let me give you a little background. First of all, I have a Dell computer. I think the serial number is 00001. It's a little old. A couple of years ago, they were replacing the telephone poles in our neighborhood, and our power was disconnected while I was on the computer, and it just was completely shot, and I took it to a repair store, and they fixed it. So ever since then, I get this pop-up every time I go on the computer that says that new hardware has been installed, and I called them, and they said, no, they didn't install any new hardware. So I don't know if this is relevant to the situation, but I thought I'd tell you. Now what's happening is my mouse is, it's a Dell mouse, it's an old one, the LED in it blips out after, you know, maybe half an hour or so, and I lose my cursor, and I shake it and it comes back on. Then I get a pop-up saying computer does not recognize USB device.
Right, what's happening is that your mouse is like shorted out or something. Maybe your USB
connection inside, maybe.
Well, is it in the mouse or in the computer?
It's hard to say. I mean, have you tried the mouse on a different USB port?
No, that's why I called. I didn't think of that.
I would try the mouse on a different USB port.
Okay.
Because what it sounds to me like is happening is that the system is kind of losing contact with the mouse and then redetecting it.
Well, would that cause the light to go out?
Well, the
light on the mouse?
The light
yeah,
on the mouse.
Yeah, the little LED and then it goes dark.
Well, the mouse gets its power from the USB.
So it could be the connection.
It could be the connection, but it could also be the mouse.
All right, now here's the second question. If it is the mouse... I remember when I bought a new printer, I got a CD and I had to put it in there. And
no,
you know, can I just buy any old mouse?
You can buy any old mouse, and for the most part, for 99% of them, you're going to plug it in. The computer's going to go detecting new hardware. Your device is ready to use, and off you go.
If you get a fancy mouse with a bunch of buttons, it may want to use.
Or if you get a,
but most of them will roll down to your basic mouse driver for USB.
Don't get a wireless mouse. Don't get anything fancy schmancy. Just get a USB mouse.
It doesn't have to be a Dell product.
No, it could be Microsoft. It could be Belkin. It could be whoever makes mouse.
Logitech
mouse these days.
That's what I needed to know. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks for your call. All right. Well, it looks like we got more calls in the queue, but the phone number, just in case you want it, 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with Technology Bites. Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who's up next?
Up next on the show, we're going to speak with Jelani.
Jelani, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, you guys. How you doing?
We're okay.
That's good. First of all, I want to say I always listen to you guys' show, and I learned a lot, and you guys are doing a great job.
Well, thank you.
When I get a chance, I'm going to donate.
All right.
I'm going to pledge.
Hold you to it.
I had a question about recording TV shows. I wanted to try to figure out a solution for recording some TV shows, whether I should go with a cable provider or whether it's cheaper for me to build a computer and connect it to my TV and do it like that. I don't know if, what kind of solution, what would you guys suggest?
Dwight just cut the cord. I want to talk to part two, what you can put in there instead of, a computer. Did you want to?
If you're cutting the cord, I just did this on Friday. And if you do that, what I would suggest doing is first trying to be as minimalist as you can and see how much you can do without getting any extra hardware, or and then if you find you need that, then move to doing something like building a PC or connecting a PC.
Well, let's stop for a second.
What about just price as far as streaming versus the cable bill?
Well, I want to address that one thing before you go there, because what he talked about was recording TV. Specifically, so the question is, what TV do you want to record? Are you wanting to record stuff that isn't available on streaming networks like Hulu and Netflix and Amazon?
Oh, no. Like regular TV shows that come on?
Yeah.
I watch some shows, I may leave the house, I'm at work right now, and I may leave the house, and I may see a commercial for a show that I'm not able to, I want to see when I get off work.
Now, but is that on one of the main broadcast channels like ABC, or is it on one of the cable channels like one of the more obscure, like USA or something like that?
Yeah, on the cable channel.
Oh, so you're not talking about getting rid of cable television.
No, he's not. He's talking about recording television. So, like, with cable, like, for example, with Comcast or Xfinity now, you can buy the DVR service. You can record any show you want for watching later. The problem with building your own equipment, now you could do this without cable. Now, these shows could be recorded. You could build hardware that would allow you to receive certain television shows, but you wouldn't have to necessarily build recording hardware if those shows were available, like what Dwight's doing. Dwight is getting a lot of his content from places like iTunes and Amazon, where you can buy the show.
Oh, okay.
Well, with Amazon, too, there are some services. If you get an Amazon Prime subscription, they've got a lot of content. You know, it's not premium. Like, well, some of the movies actually are new. They've got some new stuff that's free, but you get free streaming on a lot of the stuff. You can't purchase them, but you can watch them and stream them as much as you want.
The simplest thing to do if you want to keep cable and you want to be able to record shows is get the DVR that comes with your cable operator.
Yeah, it's usually about $15 extra to rent the device, and
depending is UVerse is not extra. It's part of it. But if you want to, you can build your own. The problem is because both Comcast has moved to a digital signal over cable, which means you have to get something called a cable card and put in. It works with your PC and works with your tuner, and so it's kind of, you could do that. It's a little work, and making it work can be tricky if you're not that tech savvy. The simplest thing is just to go ahead and get the DVR. If you don't want cable, a lot of the shows that you watch now are available for purchase either as a whole season, and you subscribe to them from Amazon, from iTunes, and they come out the day after they air on television. And it's just like having a VCR. You download it or you stream it. You can pause it. You can fast forward it. The thing about buying these shows is they don't have any commercials. The commercials are stripped out of them.
Right, but since you're, you kind of have to know what you want to watch and who provides the content.
Right, that's the problem.
That's where the confusion comes in. So going back to the original point, obviously buying from Dish or Comcast or something like that with their record DVR service is going to be the easiest, because you're going to get all your channels and you're going to be able to set up that thing to program to record the Beverly Hillbillies every Wednesday night, and you'll have it when you get home. But if you try to do a homespun solution, then you're looking at different locations.
It becomes a lot more complex.
Right. Yeah, finding your content becomes more difficult. Plus, you're not getting kind of heads up from I kind of rely on those commercials, especially like with stations like FX, because I don't always watch FX. FX cross-pollinates and advertises their shows on stations that I do watch. And so I get hip to, there's a show coming out that I want to see, so I can set up FX and record that. So that having that kind of window into what's available is very convenient. But as Dwight has decided to cut the cable, and he's going for cost-cutting measures, but he's also increasing the amount of work he has to do to be able to watch the shows that he wants to watch. And it requires a little bit more knowledge to know how to get that. So,
okay. So just don't worry about building a PC or anything like that. Either go with
that's basically reinventing the wheel. The DVR is available from the cable
Dish,
companies,
UVerse, and so forth. Yeah.
Are very easy to use. And it's the simplest thing to do.
Now, if you want to get clever, you could, you know, build a, you could use a computer that has a TV tuner on it and connect a digital antenna, and there's programs that will allow you to get your channel listings, and you could record broadcast TV.
Well, for the past 2 weeks, I've been using a Raspberry Pi to fuel, like, my big screen, and it's $35 plus a $10 SD card, and you have to know how to, you know, copy an image onto the SD card. But it gives me XBMC, which lets me watch, like, Hulu and Amazon videos, and it also comes with MythBox, which is like a TiVo service. And actually, you can record off broadcast, you can record off cable, and then it'll actually do, like, commercial skipping for you and do a lot of cool things like that. And that's, you know, that's about $45 plus, you know, call it $47 with the HDMI cable to get running. But that's just, you know, if you wanted a cheap solution to play around with that and kind of mess around with that, you can just Google for Raspberry Pi. Yeah, Raspberry Pi, P-I, like, you know, 3.14, and then XBMC, which stands for Xbox Media Center. It's just, that's not a lot of monetary commitment to be able to mess around with some neat technology. But it's still, like Dwight said, it's not going to get you as close as, you know, having a real DVR, dedicated, you know, cable box will get you.
Oh, okay. All right. That sounds good. I appreciate you all's suggestions.
All right. Thanks for your call.
Okay. Take care.
Yeah, that's the challenge I have. I mean, the cost-cutting measures of cutting the cable and kind of spinning your own solution has an appeal, but it takes a combination of some tech savvy to be able to do it, and then awareness. You just don't automatically get to know what Netflix carries and what Hulu carries and what.
Although if that's all you have, you learn it fast.
You learn it pretty fast. The bigger, I think, detriment to all this is just you don't get to watch it the night that things show up. So when everyone else is, you know, doing that buzz and, you know, putting stuff on Twitter or, like, reading things, you've got to wait till the next morning.
Yeah, Sunday night when Mad Men aired, and I love Mad Men, I had to stay off Twitter because I was working on something, had Twitter up, and I kept seeing these spoilers, and I had to, no.
People, don't put spoilers out there or mark them up as spoiler before you put it out there. But yeah, it's ruining it for us.
One of the most interesting things about this experiment is that we don't watch a lot of television in general, like maybe one or two shows a night, right? And so when you don't have that kind of immediate gratification, you find other things. So I was mentioning to Jay, Jay's seen this, there's a great BBC detective series called Luther with Idris Elba, I think is his name. And it's a great show. I wouldn't have found it if I hadn't been kind of like scouting for things. And the other thing is that kind of my wife and I tend to watch television together. We have one TV in the house. And we watch it together. So I'm there to kind of do the tech. When I'm not there, it kind of frustrates her. I watch TV on my phone, too. And when I do that, like for Netflix lets you dial back the quality. And so what's interesting is I'll dial it back for my phone so that I'm not eating up my LTE data. And then I'll forget to put it back, and she'll go to watch something when I'm not there on the big screen. It looks like crap, you know, and she has to call me, fix it, I can't, you know. So we kind of running into all these complexities. So far, we're saving $1,600 a year. It's worth it.
I will say that for my purposes, as I contemplate the possibility of cutting the cable, adding streaming to your mix first, becoming familiar with services like Hulu or Netflix or Amazon or Apple or whoever, iTunes, and knowing what's out there and learning that might allow you to then wean yourself off of the broadcast or off the cable. I know Dwight has a lot of experience with Netflix. He learned about Hulu using their free trial to see. Did you experience what I experienced with the kind of hiccups on the commercials? You're having good luck
with
that?
What is your data speed?
I'm 50 megabits.
Yeah, I'm 52. And it doesn't, I didn't see any of that.
Okay.
I don't like the commercials.
It might be, but they're short. They tend to be short. It may have to do with the fact that I'm doing Wi-Fi to get my stream. So am I.
Does your television set pick it up on the 5 gigahertz band or the?
I put it on the 5.
Yeah, see, I have to do 2.4, and I don't see that. I wonder if, how far away are you from your Wi-Fi?
Little ways. So you're saying 2.4
has the greater range has better range, but there's less interference on 5.
Is it right? Getting? Are you getting kind of stuttery when it clips over to the commercials and then it tries to come back? That's because I was having issues with that on the Raspberry Pi. There are different video codecs from what Hulu streams than what the commercials are. So if you have a like an okay powered or somewhat underpowered chip in the TV, which a lot of them do, it's having to reload another software stack to play that. So there's a little bit of a pause.
Oh,
so I thought my
are
my
you
Raspberry
doing Hulu
Pi
off of your TV or off?
Yes. Yes, and although I'm, I have a boxy box that also has the Hulu.
I should check to see if my bet you my Blu-ray has might have Hulu, and I'll have to see if I can get it that way. That might be a different option, Pete.
Or you have an Xbox, right, or a PS3?
I do have an Xbox. Does Xbox support
Xbox?
Hulu?
Xbox has a pretty powerful processor in it too.
Yeah, it looks really good.
I have to check that out because I kind of like using the app on the TV because that menu. It pulls it all into one place. If I hit the menu on my remote for my LG TV, I can see my apps, my Hulu, my Netflix, and so forth.
Can you control? Does anyone know if you can control the Xbox through your regular TV remote if you've got an HDMI connection, or do you still have to go grab the Xbox connection if you're going to watch like you know stuff through your Xbox console?
As far as I know, you have to use the Xbox to do that. The other thing I like about my TV is that. I have not only the remote for the LG, but I have this wand that acts like a mouse pointer. So I can actually take this thing, and when I pick it up, it puts a crosshairs on the screen, and I can go through and I can pause.
That's awesome. Wingardium Leviosa.
You actually, if you have a Kinect, you can use your hands to choose things.
I have
and voice.
All right, 713-526-5738. Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who's up next?
Up next on the show, we're going to speak with Steven.
Steven, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, guys. How's it?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well. I have a quick question to y'all about setting up like a live streaming set of gear, and I want to run it off of a laptop that's running OS X. And I guess I have a few questions. First off, what exactly... I'm trying to do it for basically meetings where people cannot attend so I can live stream it directly to them and then also not just directly to individuals but also put it out on the web if we're doing more of like a public event. So what kind of 3G, 4G, LTE antenna products or something to get a good signal when I don't have Wi-Fi available would be something to go with.
So what you're talking about.
Do you want to switch? Everyone switch one?
No, I'm having a Pete moment. Here we go. All right, now I got a mic.
Switch.
Now that mine seems to work.
Now that yours is working. Yeah. One of the senior hosts.
Jay, can you pre-record your answer, please?
All right, so are you wanting to stream from your phone?
No, from a laptop.
From a laptop. And
he has no Wi-Fi.
But you have no Wi-Fi, so you want to use the data connection on the phone to get what you're streaming out?
Well, I was thinking about that. I was thinking about jailbreaking my iPhone and tethering it.
You don't have to jailbreak your iPhone and tether it. You just get it through Verizon and you get
or AT&T.
But the problem if you're going to use your phone to provide the data stream for whatever it is that you're streaming out, you're going to run against your data caps.
Right. And that was another thing I was concerned with.
Are you just doing audio, or was it audio and video? I missed that part.
Audio and video.
Oh yeah, you'll chew up your cap real
right,
quick.
It would not. I would not think that using cellular data as a means of streaming out presentation quality video audio would be reasonable. Mm-hmm. I think that's not a good plan.
Right.
Now, people pulling it down, that might be, you know, if they can't be, I would have the streaming, the production part would actually be connected to the internet via, you know, standard connection, like ISDN or DSL or T1 or
no, cable. a clear stick or some kind of like, you know, WiMAX or 4G solution that plugs directly into your laptop might be able to get you. Like, I've got one of the clear hockey pucks, and it's more or less 6 megs up, 6 megs down in areas with good tower reception. And that would be enough for it to support an upstream video.
Okay. Great. So just kind of, like, look for a puck. You said WiMAX?
Well, I think there might be others around, but Clear has them. I think, like, maybe Sprint. Do they still have Buffalo cards or things like that, Dwight?
Yes.
The Sprint offer, mm-hmm. like devices yep. where you can just like, yep. mobile hotspots is what they are.
Right. However, a lot of those, unlimited plans may or may not be available for those. I'm not sure. Check at Sprint's website.
Clear is unlimited still.
Okay. Are those kind of like a month-to-month, or those contracts?
Clear is month-to-month.
It's month-to-month?
Clear is definitely month-to-month. If you buy the puck, which is, 50, 60 bucks.
Oh, okay. So that's not too much of an investment right off the bat, either.
Check. Are you always in the same location, or are you in different locations?
No, it would be different locations.
Yeah, because you want to make sure that if you're using something like WiMAX,
they have coverage
where you are.
Check the coverage maps on the site. Clear.
And how many users do you think will be viewing this when you're doing it?
I don't know. I would say at the lowest, like 10, 15.
So you're going to be streaming from your laptop a presentation while you're moving around that you want multiple people to look at.
Right. Yes, sir.
Live.
Right.
Does it have to be live?
It would be best so that they could interact with the with the event.
Why are you mobile? Why do you have to be mobile to do this?
Well, just because it's not always held at the same location, or if I wanted to cover a different different events.
Well, the other thing, I guess, have you already thought about what you're going to be using as your streaming server? Once you capture this content and you have to send it to the internet, where are you going to send it?
I'd kind of thought about live stream, but I was still in the very very beginnings of this thought process.
I like Ustream. I don't know, like how Ustream? Many. Yeah, if you get past a certain amount of viewers, if you've got to like pay anything or how that works. But I'm a fan of Ustream. Although they've started inserting commercials in there for the free for the free stuff. So,
all right. And y'all have any? Is there any software that y'all think is necessary for this? I've never done any video production or anything like that before, so I don't know if you have to compress it before you upload it, or how that works with live production.
Well,
ironic, isn't it?
Ironic, yes. obviously, it depends on how you're producing it. I mean, you're talking about taking audio and video and presenting that out. If you're live streaming it, you're probably not going to mix it down. You're not going to have an opportunity to necessarily compress it, are you?
No, I wasn't sure if there was software that compressed it down live, with a small lag, and then decompressed it when it got up. Like I said, I'm very ignorant.
That's beyond the scope of the show. What we can help you on that in terms of what you're going to need to start doing is start playing with some different solutions, and see what you can do. I don't know that we can, teach an all night course on that.
Oh no, absolutely. All right, well, I'll check out the clear system and Ustream as well. So I appreciate it.
All right, yeah. Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
And in case he's listening, that's just like the letter U in stream.tv, not like YOU stream.
It's the letter U and the numeral, too. 713-526-5738.
We have chocolate in the control room.
Uh-oh.
Now, there's
We're not eating it in here, though, but we have it.
You're just looking at it.
We're just looking at it.
Something you may want to look at, too, is I just started playing with an online conferencing service called JoinMe, join.me, and you can share your desktop, and you can actually get a URL that's join.me/something, and you can have phone calls into it. You can have – it's a really good, very thin video conferencing tool. So if you were to want to stream your video or do your video through whatever you could produce on your laptop in real time, you could share your desktop and share that with people, and they can join the meeting. They can ask questions via text. It's kind of like GoToMeeting, but it's a lot cheaper. Just put that out there. All right.
Or you can just edit footage from Cloverfield and just play that on a loop with the audio from your meeting.
Yes.
Because it's going to be that amateur, the thing's going to be bouncing around unless you get a camera and a tripod and a microphone. There's a lot of extra layers to what he was wanting to do that I think he's going to find it's a lot more complicated than hooking a laptop to the internet.
Right. Okay. Well, do we have time? Yeah, we have time. Roofhouse,
yes.
One more call.
One more call. We're going to speak to Al.
Al, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Great show, guys. Thanks a lot. I appreciate what you do.
Thank you.
I had a camera problem with my iPhone 5. Called the tech support. They set me up with an appointment at the store. I went down there, and they swapped it out. Smart enough to do the backup before I left the house. And when I got the new phone back to the house, I went to restore from the backup, and it told me that I needed an encrypted password. I've never used an encrypted password, ever, and this is like my fourth iPhone. Know it fairly well, but I called tech support again, they couldn't help. What they suggested was that I find some product that would decrypt, and I'm wondering if you guys can help me with any parts of that whole
problem. You backed up your your iPhone using, did you back it up to the cloud, or did you use iTunes?
I'm not a cloud person for that. I plug it up to the USB.
So you plugged it up to the USB and you backed it up to iTunes.
Yeah.
So when you got your new replacement iPhone, you took it home and you connected it to your computer with iTunes.
Correct.
And you chose the restore option.
Yeah.
It's asking you for a password.
Yeah, restore from backup, and it keeps asking me for. And I've tried. First of all, I knew I've never ever used a backup password, but I decided to try whatever I have used in the past. I've got probably 50, 11 different passwords, and I've actually got them all in a particular place. I've never used one, but none of the passwords that I thought I might have used had I lost my mind, none of those worked.
Did you get the option to do like a restore to factory settings, and so blow it away and start over where, and then restore the backup?
Well, you know, that's something I hadn't thought about. I haven't done that, but what they did do, now I had used the cloud in the past, and I had a previous backup also, but apparently, before I left the Apple store, the technician actually had my contacts back on the phone, and I guess the only way they could have got it was to bring it from a previous cloud backup. But when I got back to the house, the only backup I had was the one that I had done that morning. This was on Sunday. And I remember when I left, there was a previous backup from about 2 months ago. And it was no longer there.
Is your iTunes on a laptop or a desktop?
It's a laptop.
Have you taken it to the Apple store to see what they can do with it? The laptop and the phone and everything?
Well, the tech that I called after I discovered the problem seemed to think that there was nothing anybody could do, so I really hadn't given that a whole lot of thought.
Well, tell you what, listen, we got a break for the top of the hour. If you want to hold, we can put you on hold and talk about this when we come back after the Barrett time, but let me put you on hold right now. All right, hold. Okay, so we do need to go ahead and take a quick break here and do some station business. You're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groove House.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
T-Bone, why is that car still in the front yard? I told you to call KPFT.
I can't move it. The tires all flat. My raccoon's living in it.
Rocky? The raccoon? We ate that critter last week. Damn it, T-Bone. Pick up the phone, call KPFT, and they'll come haul it away.
Call 1-855-KPFT-CAR, 1-855-573-8227, and donate your unwanted car, truck, RV, or motorcycle to KPFT. We'll pick it up. Your tax-deductible donation earns you membership, possible sainthood, and all things KPFT. Call 1-855-KPFT-CAR, 1-855-573-8227. Details at kpft.org. Not all will qualify for sainthood.
Ha ha!
Spring is here. The flowers are blooming, and it's time to keep KPFT shining with a pre-pledge drive gift. I'm General Manager Dwayne Bradley. Our Spring On Air campaign starts early in May, and we're asking you to visit kpft.org now and give a sustainer pledge. It is an easy and convenient way for you to support the programs you know and love. You can also shorten the upcoming on-air drive with your contribution now. No matter how much you pledge to give, as a sustainer, you know you're always doing your part. And if you have an unwanted vehicle, you can help KPFT by donating it. Call 855-KPFT-CAR to have that car, boat, or other vehicle hauled away and to get a KPFT membership in the process. Again, that's 1-855-573-8227. Giving now at kpft.org during the month of April will help your community radio station, KPFT, Houston.
You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
What is there?
Oh,
no,
yeah, there's no bear. I had a horrible headache before, but now I feel awesome, Dwight. Was there I wish there was a bear at time.
Was there no station ID in either one of those two?
You know, one of those people didn't record a full minute. They recorded 51 seconds. So I had a 9-second gap, so I decided to do a station ID to fill up that 9 seconds.
Okay. Gotcha. All right. So let's go back to our call on hold. Can we do that?
Am I picking him up?
He's on.
All right, so back to the iPhone encrypted password issue.
Yeah, and I did, one of the other things they suggested was to try to find, you know, something off the internet, and I did some searches. There are two or three programs out there that'll cost about $50, and I don't know if I can trust them. I don't know if you guys have something you could recommend or any other solution other than possibly taking it back to the Apple store along with the laptop.
Well, I'm just not getting why it's asking you for a password on the restore unless you specify. Now, is there an option when you back up your phone to password protect it?
It asks you if you want to encrypt it and password protect it.
Yeah.
And what he may have done is he may have thought that he should put in his Apple ID password. I presume you've tried your Apple ID password.
That was the first one I tried.
Right, right. And so either you may have mistyped it or, but that's the only logical thing I can think of.
I've actually never, ever used one. I've never put one in.
I would take it back to the Apple store and explain with your notebook and explain to them what has happened. They may have an easy fix, but you won't know till you go in with it.
Okay.
Yeah, unfortunately, if it's encrypted and you've got a password, I've never tried to crack an encrypted backup for the iPhone.
You know, there's
Elcomsoft will do it, or will sometimes do it. That's the company that had the Dmitry Skylarov hacker that, you know, they arrested after the DEF CON talk. But yeah, there's something, and it's hit or miss, and I believe that you can get a trial version. It'll say like, hey, we can retrieve it, or hey, we can't. But it's like ELCOM soft.
The other thing is that there often is more, if you have backed it up several times, more than once, there are multiple backups on there. Not all of them may be encrypted.
Well, there was one from about 2 months ago before I did the backup, and it was no longer there when I got back. And I think I asked them if it had anything to do with the serial number of the device, not being able to find a backup from a previous serial number, and I was told, of course, that wouldn't be an issue. I don't know how they identify one device from the other except for a serial number. Telephone number is the same.
Well, you should be able to restore a backup to a different device, because when you buy a new one, that's how you get all your goodies from your old one onto the new one. So that shouldn't be an issue.
I agree.
What's in the backup?
In the backup that I have?
In the backup that you can't get to, what's in there?
Everything that was on the phone before I took it to the Apple store. I had, contacts, I had calendar.
So your contacts and your calendar were not tied to, say, a Gmail account?
No, I've never done that.
Okay. Just as a possible future thing, I really like having all of my contacts and stuff tied to my Gmail. And so whenever I get, if I was to replace my iPhone today, then I would just reset up my Gmail account and all my contacts and calendar items would come rolling right back down.
Yeah, well, one of the other issues, of course, though, is text threads, and Gmail wouldn't do much with that, I don't think. That's one of the key or critical parts of that.
I've heard that from a couple of people that are interested in saving their texts.
And yeah, I have a lot of information in my texts.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't strike me as a thing, but I understand if it is for others. All right, well, unfortunately, the best option I could give you is to... What have you got,
Barrett? Elcomsoft definitely does it.
Elcomsoft?
Elcomsoft, yeah. It says the new tool recovers the original plain text passwords, protecting and encrypting backups for Apple and BlackBerry devices. So it'll definitely get you into the tool. Now, the only question is how long it takes to get the password, to crack the password.
Yeah, that's E-L-C-O-N or C-O-M?
Com, like Elcom, like October, Michael are the two last ones.
All right, guys. Listen, I appreciate it. Love the show, and I'll never stop listening. You do a great job.
All right. Thanks for your call tonight. Bye.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
All right. All right. 713-526-5738 if you want to put Groovehouse to work. Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who's been working?
Yes. I'm working, Jay. I'm working. What? Huh? What's going on?
What you got?
I got nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing.
All right. Who's up next?
We got six open lines.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
You literally got nothing.
I got nothing. I got a big fat nothing.
Wow. We
got a guy listening in from Canada, I guess, in IRC. And
I'm sorry.
Just not to beat a dead stream to death, but he said streaming in Canada is extremely limited. They've only got Netflix and Apple. There's no over-the-air unless you're near a major city or on the border. And no Amazon streaming. And also, even if you want to watch Hulu, you probably need a kludge to get around the service, which means it's probably locked down to IP.
Right.
So if you're listening to a stream from outside the U.S., we actually have it probably better than most, it sounds like.
In the blog posts that I've done on cord cutting, I have had several people from Canada chime in, and you see that on Twitter a lot, too, where people say that in Canada it's just – I guess that's a rights issue, but it's sounds like it's time to move.
What about like UK, UK, you get the BBC for free if you have television service, right?
That's not true. You have to – all BBC is subscription in the UK.
That's what I'm saying. But if you've got the subscription, then you get online streaming also.
Yes, and apparently there is a way to spoof a British IP.
There's some services out there that'll give you like a Brit IP address and vice versa. I know a lot of those people will do stuff to get to
true for Canada. Content. I mean, does Canada not have any stations of their own?
They do, but I think it's...
They've got WKAA.
Oh!
Sorry.
Somebody call in and put us out of our misery for that. 713-526-5738.
I was just thinking maybe since Canada is like the UK as far as their government, maybe, they would have a similar... media system, but I don't know.
Ask our Canadian friend online.
He left the chat room.
He was so depressed.
Maybe he's moving. Yeah,
he's
coming
back. It
crikey, it's the Mounties. I wonder if they say crikey. I don't know if they say crikey in Canada. What?
I think that's Australia.
Yeah, they're Australians.
Well, it's also British. Because one of my favorite lines from Top Gear is when James May says, crikey, it's the Albanian Rossers. But you have to be a fan of the show, I guess. All right.
We don't have a lot of calls right now. But I always thought Top Gear was very much a car show. Like, you had to be into cars, but it's not. I've been watching a couple of the episodes, kind of went in search of something, and it's pretty good.
You should watch the specials.
I watched the Vietnam special. It was hilarious. I've actually watched that twice because it was so good.
Because... Yeah. That's how I got turned on to Top Gear. We were in Belgium and starred for English television. And I'm working on processing images and updating my blog. And Cynthia is watching TV, and she's just laughing and laughing and laughing. And I look up, and I start to watch it, and it's the Vietnam special. And I didn't know who Top Gear was, what Top Gear was or who the characters were, and I didn't even know the name of the show, but I thought that Jeremy Clarkson was Stephen Fry. I mean, I don't know my Stephen Fry all that well, but I had it in my head. I was tired, you know, and when we got back to the United States, and then a year later, I was like, I need to find that show. What was that show we were watching? It was so funny. So Stephen Fry Vietnam did not yield very many results, but I finally found it. I finally found that it was Top Gear, and we've been addicted ever since. I recommend it highly.
Are they all like that? That's the one I saw.
No, they're not all like that. They have those are the specials.
Okay.
Which they have one where they cross through South America. They go through the jungles, and it's insane. And they have one, some of their regular broadcast shows, some of the regular shows, they had one where they took a Toyota Hilux and outfitted it to go up the side of a volcano and collect lava samples.
They've still got like weird contests.
They do have like weird contests. Some of it's straight up car reviews, but then some of it's like
Winnebago from scratch or something. Or
they built their own trains one time. One of them built trains out of caravans, out of campers. It's all on Netflix.
Well, that's good because that's what I was going to say. All of them are out there.
It's all on
Netflix
except for season one. But you know, if you get hooked, you want to see season one.
The first one's free.
No, but it's a great show. I highly recommend it. Some of it's just remarkably funny. Like Jeremy Clarkson will do a review of a car, and it's all normal. And then how does it do inside of a sewer pipe? And he takes the car inside and tries to do a whole spin around the. Yeah, it's great fun. Good show. 713-526-5738. Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who's up next?
Up next on the show, we're going to speak with Roger.
Roger, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Good. I used the Elements 11 for Adobe to edit a photo, and I wanted to put it into a folder so I could burn it to a CD, but it put an alias on there. And only that, in the Finder, burn folder was grayed out. I couldn't select it. And I wonder if they've somehow they don't want me to burn a JPEG file to a folder that I can put on a CD or DVD.
That's probably accurate. Adobe Elements is pretty much anti-JPEG burning to CDs and DVDs. No, it's not the case at all. They want you to be able to do that. I'm not that familiar with that piece of software, but you're able to output.
It's like Photoshop Lite, basically. Right.
So you output to a JPEG, and can you actually find the JPEG file?
Oh, sure.
And you can
what it does when I burn it to the CD. There's only an alias there. So I pop that back in the computer and select it, and sure, it goes out and finds the file.
So you're only managing to burn an alias or a link to the file.
That's correct.
How are you burning your CD? Are you trying to burn that inside of the Adobe program, or are you using the...
No, I didn't try that. No.
I'm just asking, yes or no. Yes. So you're using what processor are you using to burn the CD?
Well, I pop the CD in, and I can then drop a file into it and tell it to burn, but it burns the alias. So.
Have you tried right-clicking or control-clicking on the file, copying, and then going over to the icon and doing a paste?
Yeah.
Well, I'm wondering,
does that do the same thing?
I think he's actually just grabbing an alias.
It was a couple of days ago when I was doing this, so that was certainly one of the things I would have tried.
I'm thinking that you're actually, when you're outputting your files, that you're somehow grabbing an alias file and burning that to disk. You're not succeeding in burning the actual JPEG file.
Exactly. Is it when I click on that and I drag it, it doesn't show the plus sign that would indicate it's going to copy that file.
It does not.
Okay. It shows a an icon for the image.
Where are you putting the original image? What folder is it stored in?
That's stored in pictures.
Is it an? It's not an iPhoto image, is it?
Well, no. That was That worked. When I took that image, put it in the iPhoto, then I could burn it to a DVD or CD.
I would right-click on the file that you're copying and see what the file info tells you about it. I wonder if it could be, I mean, it wouldn't be a read-only or a permissions thing.
No, I looked at that. I did a command I on it, and it said I had read and write privileges.
Pete, have you seen anything like this? Do you know anything about a possible alias issue here?
From Elements. Just to get you to describe it again. So you say, when you save it, and it's only when you save it as a JPEG that you have this problem?
Well, that's all I've tried to save it as. I figured if I save it as a JPEG instead of a whatever Adobe wants.
Right, Adobe has its own format, so you could go back and edit it again later. But JPEG, what about like a PNG file?
Yeah, I haven't done that. Haven't tried that.
I'm not sure why it's doing that, unfortunately. But my guess is that it's got to be somehow in the way that you're burning. Have you tried taking the final output JPEGs, throwing them into a folder, and then taking that folder and burning it to the CD?
I can't remember whether I tried that or not, but the folder has an alias in it. So if I drop it into a folder, it doesn't put the image there. It puts an alias to the image.
Then there's got to be a way to copy the file without making it. I don't know why it's doing that. I take
photos. I take iPhoto, and then I could do it.
I take photos and drop them into folders. Take those folders and drop them onto external hard drives. Move the hard drive to another computer. I have the file. I use Adobe Photoshop, but I output to a JPEG. I save the JPEG and put it in a folder. I can put it on a thumb drive. I can put it on a CD all day long. No problem. There's something in your copy process that's grabbing what do you find?
Well, Greg? No, this is just me thinking out loud, but I know that if you hold down the command key and the option key when you drag and drop, it creates an alias instead of just copying or moving the file.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's not some preferences somewhere that says that you can change the behavior of that or something like that. But
I wasn't doing that.
No, I'm not accusing you of doing that, but I'm wondering if, well, I don't know. I guess that wouldn't be specific to a certain file.
No, as soon as I pull it off onto the desktop,
it becomes an alias.
I don't get a plus sign. I get an alias. Exactly. I just wondered if this was a known issue with Adobe. If they're wanting me to
Adobe doesn't want you to
order prints from them.
No, they don't. It's not a conspiracy, and I don't want to editorialize. Right. It's not a conspiracy by Adobe. Like I said, I use Adobe products. I'm in Photoshop right now. And I can take that file and I can upload it to the web. Do you have any online places you can try to take that file and upload it and see what happens?
No, I haven't done it.
No web. Do you have the ability to do it?
Well, I could. I just haven't signed up for any of them.
All right. I don't know why you're getting an alias instead, but we could try to do a little bit more research offline. If you want to email me this problem, I'll help you dig into it. But I do not know why this is happening for you, but it's got to be a setting or something somewhere. I know that, for example, if I take a file and I drag it, say, from one folder to another on my Mac, it removes it from the folder I drag it from. Are you copying the file or are you moving the file?
I tried to copy.
Have you tried moving?
I made a copy.
Have you tried moving it? Have you tried just moving the file?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Yeah. But when you move it, does it become an alias?
Yes.
So you're not actually moving it?
That's correct.
So does the file stay in the folder where it was that you moved it from?
Yes, it did.
Okay, so you have not successfully moved it. You've created an alias. It's almost as if, maybe your control or command key is stuck.
There's a way I'm looking. It's kind of like along the lines of a Windows registry hack, even though this is an OS 10. But there's a way that you can actually go in and you can set your default drag drop. It can either be move, copy, or link. So I'm wondering if it's not set somehow. Like somehow maybe something set in, maybe even in Adobe where it makes certain things for you. Maybe that did the setting, but there's a way to do that. So,
I'll look into that.
Yeah, look into it because you're what did you find?
Okay, so you can actually explicitly choose the move actions as well. So in the Finder, copy is going to be Option and the Alt. So Option, Alt, and click will be, that's the way you force a copy. So I would try that.
Option, Alt, click. Okay. All right.
All right. Sorry, we don't have a better answer for you.
Yeah. Well, right. That's the way it goes.
Thanks for your call.
All right. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
That's an odd one.
But yeah, it is very odd.
Sounds to me like there's something stuck. It's almost like, you know, when he goes to copy the file or move the file, if he's moving it, it just creates an alias because it's leaving the file in the original folder. If anybody has the answer to that one, I'd love to hear it. But
or somehow like Option's getting pushed, like maybe he's got some kind of macro where when he hits his mouse thing, maybe it adds a keystroke or something, but it's definitely moving links.
Yeah, definitely. All right. 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air. Groovehouse? Yes. Oh, he's still on the phone. All right. Do we have a call we can just take cold?
I could just push a button here.
Is he
off?
He's about to hang up, I think.
Here you come. So, well,
the thing we have to really emphasize to the people that call into our show is that you should not dominate the time of the phone screener. He's not there to answer your questions, and it ties him up.
While we're waiting, here's something interesting. Let's see. I've just looked up, because I don't make a lot of – I don't burn a lot of discs because everything stays pretty electronic. It says something about, let's see, burn a CD or DVD in the Finder. You know, they tell you to insert a blank disk into the optical drive, double-click the disk to open its window, then drag the files and folders you want to burn to the window. Aliases to the files are placed in the disk's window. The original files are not moved or deleted. Then you arrange it around, and then when you burn it, the disk will have the same names and locations they have in the disk window. So in other words, it does the alias thing may be the actual... He just noticed it. Most people probably just drag the stuff and then burn the disk and it's done. Unless he's burned a disk and it's had only aliases on the resulting disk, I would say maybe he needs to try to just go through the whole process and then see if it worked correctly. Because one disk, how much, you know, I mean, that's 10 cents anymore.
Yeah. All right. 713-526-5738. Groovehouse, are our callers dominating your time on the phone? Do they need to be?
No, we had a question, and I was getting the answer for the gentleman.
I see. The show within a show.
Yes. Second. Yes.
The private show.
Yes, the private show.
Sideshow.
Private screening.
Sideshow Groovehouse. Yeah, private screening.
All right.
Hey-o.
All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
For public consumption, what do we have?
Okay. For public consumption, we're going to speak with Gary.
Gary, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hello. I have a very strange question, but it's very important to me. I've always heard that pollsters calculate when they get, when there's like a letter to the editor or a letter to the White House, that if they get one letter, there's 100 people that didn't write that have the same opinion. So when I go on Google, I see that whenever they have the results up at the top there, the numbers go up and down, but they always go up and down by a factor of 10. Like you have 2,410,000, and then it's 2,390,000, and then 2,440,000. Well, do they do that? Do they estimate that if you get a hit, then there's 100? What is the value of these numbers? I mean, it's never, you know, 412 or 418. It's always factors of 10.
It's an estimation, and because Google kind of start out as engineers, they do it to like significant powers. So, you know, does it really matter if you have 100 hits or, you know, 100 returns or 400 returns? Or does it matter 100 returns versus 100,000 returns?
Well, then what's the point of having the numbers if they're not accurate?
It's accurate. It still gives you a really good idea. It's just not, the thing is,
it's not precise.
It's not extremely precise because they don't want to like, oh no, we've got to change it because one website just went offline. Oh, this guy just wrote some content. We're going to bump it up by one.
Is this the poet?
It would take forever.
It's just an estimate is what you're saying.
That's
so
right.
That's exactly what we're saying.
Exactly. It's an estimate. It is an estimate. All right. 713-526-5738. Thank you, screener. All right.
Gotta keep it exciting.
It is. I just about jumped out of my seat. No, that was that promo. All right. All right, Groovehouse. Do you have another call? Do you have another call for us?
No more calls.
That's it. 713-526-5738.
Six open lines, Jay.
Now is that an estimate or do we really have a call?
Is that zero or is that
It's zero.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah. Sorry.
No problem.
Just wait till there's one call. Or was that just an editorial comment?
We love you all. I do, really. All right. 713-526-5738 is the number to call if you would like to be on the air with us tonight. We have about 30 minutes or 300 minutes left in the show.
Just an estimate.
Notice how much better Pete sounds now.
Why is that?
We switched to Skype.
Bet we switch back from whatever Google's
chat.
Skype is sounding good.
Skype. Yeah.
So we want to try to do the news live next week. Dare we?
Well, if we want to do it, we should do it right now because it sounds really good right now. Not sure how it's going to sound.
Do next week's news now.
We'll do it right now. We'll record it. You can burn that to a CD.
We're doing it live.
And then if the connection's good next week, we'll record the week after. It's the, I don't know if you've ever seen Mr. Show where they have the time-delayed call-in show. Where the show you're seeing right now is people and their pets, but when you see that show, you should be calling in about your grandparents, and then they have a whole infinite loop at the end of it where they show the previous week's show where he keeps getting calls for the show that people are seeing, not the show that's being taped for time delay. Did I fill enough time before to get us a call?
Nope. Thanks, though.
Oh, well,
thanks
I'll
for the news.
I can describe more TV shows to you. No.
What other shows do you like?
Let's talk about when the Geek Gathering is.
Estimated.
Yeah. First Friday of the month.
50 days Once a month. Away from now.
Once a month on the first Friday. Monthly. Unless it falls on a Saturday and then it's the following Friday. Right.
It's approximately.
It's annually, but it's 12 times a year. We have the annual April Geek Gathering.
So
the annual March Geek Gathering.
Dodeca annual.
Dodeca?
That means 12.
Dodeca.
Dodecahedron.
So it's what? Dodeca monthly, right?
That's 12 times
it's
a month, right?
It's dodeca yearly.
It's every other dodec.
You know,
the first dodec of the deck.
Semi-annual and biannual, like all that, they always confuse
me. Same with semi-monthly and bi-monthly. Like, does bi-monthly mean every 2 months or twice a month?
Yeah, I don't know.
Bi-weekly should be twice a week, but it's not. It's every other week.
Which could be the same as bi-monthly.
Yeah.
Right.
No, it's every other month.
Bi-weekly could mean twice a week. We do a lot of file transfers, so there's always like these forms where you put in frequency, and we get some really weird frequency.
I think it's just an estimate of how often you're going to get the content. It's no less than twice a month, but it could be more than twice a month, depending on whether or not one of the months goes offline. 713-526-5738. Now I understand why Groovehouse had a hard time getting off the phone. And so now every time Groovehouse picks up the phone and then quickly puts it down again and puts his headphones on, I know it's not that guy. All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who's up?
Up next on the show, we got a question for Barrett. This is Ben.
Ben, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good. How are
you? Good. Sorry. I'll take my call off the air. I'm sure it's bad. But I wanted to hear about Raspberry Pi. I know one of you guys is playing with it. And I was looking into getting into some of those prototyping boards like Arduino and Raspberry Pi and and some of those things, and thought I'd like to know a little more information about it. How'd it work and stuff?
All right. Well, we'll take it offline and let Barrett address that for you.
Okay. Well, I guess they're two totally different things. What you've got going on is there's this big revolution. It's kind of like, I guess some people call it the maker revolution, where really high-end, well, used to be high-end electronics have gotten very cheap. So you can actually get like a very small, you call it credit card-sized microcontroller with USB and with different peripherals on it for, you know, $30-$35. Now, the caller mentioned Arduino, and he mentioned Raspberry Pi. Arduino is, most of them are 8-bit machines. They're, if you want to flash some LEDs on or off, or if you want to control like a remote control vehicle, or if you want to do some things like that, it's very good at it. But if you want to have video or have a real actual computer, that's kind of where the Raspberry Pi steps in. So what the Raspberry Pi is, it is a, you know, fairly speedy. I think it's like 800 megahertz. I'm probably wrong on that. It's got a half gig of RAM. It's got HDMI. It's got Ethernet. It's got two USB ports. It's got a mini USB for power. And pretty much if you, and it's got an SD card reader. So the deal is if you want to mess around with Raspberry Pi, all you do is you go out, you get an SD card, you find a distribution or an operating system that you'd like to run on it, and instead of, you know, having to go through the installation process, you know, like you would with a computer, you just copy this operating system over to this compact flash card or the SD card, you put it in, and then it boots up.
So it's basically a computer from maybe 6 or 7 years ago.
Yeah, that's kind of what you're looking at.
And the technology has gotten so cheap and miniaturized that they can fit a whole computer from 6 or 7 years ago now in the size of a
It's extremely small. So at the very minimum, what you can do is, you know, people are making set-top boxes out of these because it's so cheap. So you've got two things going for you. You've got cheapness and you've got smallness. So before, maybe you wanted to put a computer like in a scooter or on a skateboard or in your car or something like that. Before, it would be kind of prohibitive. I had friends that did that, but they would have to strap it down to the back of the thing. Or, and, you know, be able to power it is really tough. Monitors, it gets really tough. But now you can actually, you know, you can actually just get it in there, and it's extremely cheap to do it. I wish we had video sometimes in here.
But,
another thing that wouldn't work.
Just add another layer of complexity to our fail wagon.
But yeah, I mean, kind of my perception of it is that I view it as basically a computer from 6 or 7 years ago, because the parts have gotten so cheap for that technology and stuff. They can miniaturize it so much more that they're able to put on a very small thing. And because in most areas, computing needs haven't kept up with the pace of what's coming out. Mm-hmm. So as of around that time, all of a sudden, what most people do with computers, the computers you can get do way more, have way more power than what a lot of people do with them. So it's to a point now where these super miniaturized small Raspberry Pi computers that are really cheap could actually function to do what a lot of people do with computers if you're not doing, you know, video editing or large photo editing or stuff like that. Like, you could actually use it as a regular computer, and it would, you know, satisfy, I would say, a fair percentage of people.
Oh, yeah. We're even thinking about using Raspberry Pis to deploy for, like, business continuity disaster recovery terminals because, you know, they boot up. You've got a web browser. They'll do Java. They do whatever you want. And, you know, it's awesome. No moving parts, you know, and it's extremely cheap. That's what should have happened. Like, you know, back when we, you know, had, like, Pentium machines, instead of computer prices staying pretty much the same and getting more and more power, they should have gotten smaller and cheaper. And this is kind of what it does. It's like, you know, It's pretty cool. So I would say go check out sites like sparkfun.com, check out arduino.cc.
When they mm-hmm. first released them, though, there were more orders, right? Then,
yes.
And so there was a shortage, like they were in demand, and they had already basically allocated all the product.
Yeah, for Raspberry Pi, there were some manufacturing issues. Like, I waited 6 weeks, you know, trying to get a hold of one. Now, the last one I got, I bought at Micro Center.
So they're actually available in stores, like, now. Yeah. On shelves, like there's not a shortage.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I thought, but I wasn't sure because I haven't looked for one.
Yeah, they're both fun to play with. I would say if you want to play with electronics, go with Arduino. If you want to play with computers, go with the Raspberry Pi.
Yummy.
And come to a geek gathering. We usually have both of them out there. So
we had an Arduino, not an Arduino, we had a Raspberry Pi powering a big giant LCD. And
yeah, we were doing set-top TV stuff, XTMC.
No, it was. It had like all these menus, and there was info on the movie, and it was
movie was playing.
The movie was playing.
It was coming out of a hockey puck.
Yeah. It was incredible. I was transfixed by the menus.
Which do you like more?
The menus.
The Raspberry Pi driving that large LCD TV or dark chocolate?
Right now, dark chocolate. But last Friday at the Geek Gathering.
You say dark chocolate like many people say Darth Vader.
Oh, man. You missed it. I was doing the chocolate dance earlier. Yeah, that was good.
I'm sorry I missed that.
Yeah, you are.
I thought that was a different dance.
Yeah, if only we had video.
Yeah.
Missed yeah. it. All right, Groove House. Yep. It looks like you might have screened a call or two.
I did.
All right. I did.
I did. I did it.
Me.
I did it.
Look at me.
It's me.
It's me.
It's me.
Schmeagle. All right. Who do we have?
Up next on the show, we are going to speak with Billy.
Billy.
Yes.
What can we do for you tonight here on Technology Bites, Billy?
I'm trying to compress some JPEG files so that I can email them. But whenever I run them through the QuickZip program, it puts them out with a zip suffix on them.
Yep.
But they're the same size.
Right, because JPEG files are already compressed. And zipping does nothing for you.
Okay.
So if you want to transfer the high resolution files, then you're looking at using something like Dropbox or something like that to be able to deliver the files. If what purpose are you trying to send them?
I just want to send them to some friends.
So they can look at it.
Yeah.
Resize it.
Okay.
Chances are you don't need a 3,000 by 3,000 pixel image that's straight off the camera. You can resize it down to something like, 800 by 600 and send that and then save a copy so you save your original and send them the smaller file.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
That sounds good.
All right.
Appreciate your help.
Thanks for your call.
Enjoy your show.
Thank you very much. There you go. Yeah, that's kind of a wake-up call I think we all have to have at some point in our lives is that some files don't compress because they're already compressed, like image files, movie files.
MP3s,
things like that.
And you can't send everything through email.
That's right. Email is not the preferred delivery system for large amounts of data. But files that will compress down, text files, Word files, documents, that kind of stuff, we're talking about dramatic.
Although nowadays,
I know what's the point.
Files aren't big enough that you need to.
Right, exactly. But if you were just looking for some dramatic compression, zip yourself up some text files. You'll be amazed. You'll have the time of your life. All right, Groovehouse.
Yes, Jake.
Do we have another call?
No, sir.
No, we do not.
Six open lines.
No, we do not.
All right.
So we'll just turn this into a morning show.
Yes.
Boing. Well, I was talking to Groovehouse at the Geek Gathering about he's going to be that funny Hispanic guy from the morning talk show.
Can we get him to wear a bee costume?
I thought there was a rule the funny Hispanic sounding guy is never actually Hispanic.
Right.
Well, see, that's where our authenticity comes in.
Wasn't the KOL morning Hispanic guy named Boner?
Eddie the Boner Sanchez.
Yeah.
A long time ago.
Just down the street, too. That was like a block away.
Yeah. Well, so near and yet so far.
Groovehouse could bring that back to life for us.
Hmm.
As long as he stays in that room.
I want to be the guy in the bee costume.
You want to be...
Ay, Dios mío. Jay Lee. We have a call online, too.
Because I can't possibly wait for that.
Bee costume next week.
We're actually the calls on line one.
Yes, it is. We're getting a call on line one. We should just take a cold.
For all intents and purposes, you are in a bee costume.
That's right.
I got
a stinger. Look at my stinger, Jay. Come here. Touch my stinger.
Oh, man. I don't know whether this is okay or not.
On a lot of different levels here.
I feel uncomfortable. Groovehouse doing that. All right. 713-526-5738. We have about 20 minutes left in the show, give or take an outro. So we've got time to take your call if you'd like to be on the air with us. Groovehouse will speak to you in the accent of your choice. So there's Irish or Scottish or French. I would just put him on the spot for that. So Groovehouse, we want to hear your other accent.
I want to hear Icelandic.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I saw Sigur Rós.
Just think Dort.
All right. Groovehouse?
Yes.
French.
Oui, oui. Okay, next on the line. Okay, I need a croissant.
Hey, Dwight.
Just for fun, because I've got this internet thing in front of me, I looked up Eddie the Boner Sanchez, and you know what his real name is?
What?
Brian Shannon.
That's right. He's a comedian.
I wonder if he's related to Keyshawn Shannon.
That's the same guy, I think.
No.
I don't know. It's probably his brother.
But the Shannons, that's from, they're from what? Is that from Ciudad Juarez or?
Yeah.
All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who do we have
I
on
think
the
that's
line?
From Monterey Hack.
Next up, we are going to speak with Jim.
Jim, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Okay, thanks, guys. That guy must have been an Irish Mexican. Anyways, I have a question as far as I started off with a Dell that had THX and then and speakers, and I've got speakers right now, some Logitech speakers that have THX, and I wanted to upgrade my audio video receiver because I have an old one, and I know they have some out there at THX, but I just wanted to get you guys' opinion. Is this just about hoopla about THX, or is there something really significant behind it?
THX? I mean, I think
it's an actual right. standard.
It's sort of two ways. I think if you set up in a great room that's got, you know, serious acoustics and all that kind of stuff, that then THX is going to really do something for you. Otherwise, I mean, it's surround sound, and it'll sound as good as where you set the speakers and what the room sounds like.
Yeah, because I was looking into, replacing my, receiver, but I noticed they have some that are THX, certified. I wonder if I should spend the extra money on that or
depends
not.
Depends on what you're going to be pumping through it. I mean, if you have, THX content, like a lot of movies are THX, they have THX
right.
audio.
Right.
If you're going to get a system that supports that and then have the ability to output that in a good room with, you know, good acoustics on it, it might be worth it. I don't know how much of an audiophile you are, though.
I love the music and all the nuances and et cetera, but I don't have the room, you know. Right. I don't have the, I just have a regular, little room that everybody watches TV on,
Well, listening to music, the THX thing is only really good for surround sound as far as I've ever heard.
Yeah.
So it's not going to make that big, it's not going to really make that big a difference for listening to stereo music other than the, synthetic surround sound stuff that you can get on just about any receiver now.
I think THX still is a standard for stuff, even not with surround sound.
Well, going on that also, LG has THX TVs, which, throws me off also. What's the deal on that?
Well, the TV has the ability to output that audio into a receiver that, or an amplifier or a sound system, a surround system that would support that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah.
There should be a certification, though. That's odd, though, that any TV would have speaker quality that would be THX certified.
I like it, but I thought maybe it's just making George Lucas more money.
Well, everything's making George Lucas more money, but now Disney.
Yeah, now
THX though is still owned by him, I guess.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. Well, listen, guys, you've been great, but I had another question, but
sure.
I pulled over, and I went blank. But I have a laptop that it's got the blue screen, of course, maybe I'll call in next week.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks for your call.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
All right. 7-1, we're going to probably run out of time. Well, maybe not. 713-526-5738. Looks like Groovehouse is screening one more call for us to be able to put on the air. So we will go out to the studio and ask Groovehouse who the heck it is and what do they want.
Does Dwight want to speak?
Did Dwight wish to speak?
Just a trivia. Don't Google it. What is the name of the THX sound? It has a sound. It has a name.
Ooh. Hmm.
Did he trademark it, or is it like a brand kind of thing that people
hint.
Would recognize?
Can I have a hint, please?
The Waum.
The Flush.
Oh, you mean how does it sound?
No, what is the name of the sound? Yeah. As a name.
That's why I'm...
A warm-up.
I kind of named it like it sounds.
Vroom.
It? It's called Deep Note.
Deep Note.
Deep Note. I saw that in the 70s.
Different. That was different. The sounds were different, too.
THX. I don't know. Depends on whether you're talking about the actors or the viewers, what the sounds
were. Or the soundtrack.
The soundtrack was different than the audio in the room, the very small room.
That is the audio logo of THX is how they
the audio
it.
How they
audio
describe it?
Logo.
It's like the Windows startup sound.
Exactamundo.
It is a pretty good indication.
Ta-da.wave.
If you're watching a home theater and you put in the DVD and you hear that sound, you have a pretty good idea of whether it's going to be really lame or pretty cool when the movie gets going.
Sounds pretty tinny.
That is not off of a THX certified system.
No, it's not.
The audience is laughing.
All right. Groovehouse, who do we have?
Up next on the show, we're going to speak with Jim.
Jim.
Hello. Hi, guys.
You're on the air with Technology Bites. What can we do for you?
I have got a MacBook Pro. It's a couple years old, and I'm getting a new MacBook Pro. Question is, what's the easiest way to get the files from my old MacBook Pro onto my new MacBook Pro?
The Migration Assistant.
Okay.
It's a product that's on the, it'll be probably on your old one as well as your new one. And you can connect them up over a network. You can do a direct cable and just send them over. If you've done a Time Machine backup.
Yeah, I've got that.
You could also restore from a Time Machine backup.
Which would you recommend?
I would do Migration Assistant.
You use the Migration Assistant.
Yep.
Hook the two together. I could do it through FireWire, right?
And yep. Then, yep, absolutely.
And then launch Migration Assistant on each one, and it'll...
I think the new ones still come with FireWire, but you can...
Oh, whatever, yeah. I can figure out two ways to connect them.
Right.
Okay.
Very simple.
I'm sorry, say again?
Very simple.
Okay. Well, super.
Just take time.
Thank you very much, guys. I appreciate it.
All right, thanks for your call.
Bye.
Yeah, it does take a while.
The only other thing I would say is you want to be careful if you've done several machines where you migrated the account, because it will bring along extra stuff, texts and things that you don't see, and it can screw up the newer machine. I'm talking about after, you know, generations. If you have an older machine that you have migrated several times.
You want to be careful, too, if you're using any of these methods, that you don't just copy SIM links over to your new computer, because you'll have to have the old computer on for it to boot. Pa-dum-tums. All right, 713-526-5738. Looks like we have a call in the queue. Groovehouse is doing the Groovehouse shuffle.
It's the chocolate dance.
It's the chocolate dance. Groovehouse, is it
it's a cup of coffee I had earlier.
Is it?
Yeah.
It's the fact that you don't have to get up at 5 o'clock tomorrow morning? That's what it is.
It
kind of looked like when he's doing that, what was he calling the chocolate dance? Yeah. To me, he should be going... Mary Poppins.
What's that guy who's the dancing around the world guy?
Whoa.
Oh, yeah. I don't remember his name.
Yeah, Groovehouse is doing the dance, so he knows what I'm talking about.
It's my Andy Kaufman impersonation.
Your what?
Andy Kaufman.
Andy Kaufman? Like a man on the moon?
Yeah.
All right, Groovehouse. I've
been watching a lot of Andy Kaufman videos on YouTube lately.
He was brilliant.
He was brilliant.
Or not.
He was pretty brilliant.
In retrospect, maybe more than he was at the time.
I mean, you know,
the time people just didn't get it.
He really couldn't have any friends because he was perfectly happy if nobody except he got the joke, which usually would happen. Like him and maybe his one friend were in
Bob
on
Zamuda.
This joke that like nobody else, and he didn't care that nobody else got it.
He didn't care if anybody else liked it either. I mean, that's like when he did the performance piece where he just got up and read the book.
I think he might have cared a little bit, but I think his idealism to, like, you know, make
who's
his
the
points
character? Who's
was...
the character? Bernie Tipton. Bernie Trafton.
No,
what?
No.
Tony Clifton.
Yes, that was the one that.
And they, that now that one that was, but that was in persona. I mean, he was.
And then
to
there was like whether or not that he was always playing the character
because he wasn't.
The weird stuff with the wrestling, with women's wrestling.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Where he was trash talking.
Have you seen the Saturday Night Live?
Trash talking the South.
Have you seen the Saturday Night Live thing where he did? He just played the record of
Mighty Mouse.
Mighty
Mouse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Funny.
Yeah.
Yes.
Ah, yes. Rest in peace, Sandy Kaufman.
Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who's up next?
Up next on the show, we're going to speak with Terry.
Terry, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Listen, I have a desktop computer that finally bit the dust. The hard drive's part of it's corrupted and all that. And I've decided I want to get a laptop to use instead. And I need something that has a lot of memory and is really fast. My husband is an attorney. He'll be using it a lot. And I was wondering what you all recommended.
Well, I mean, there's tons of computers that are available out there with lots of memory and that are very fast. We don't really recommend like a brand or a model number. What I recommend is that you determine how much money you've got to spend. And,
well, you know, when I was talking with the guy that does a lot of my work for me at my business, it's a different type of drive system, and I can't
tell you the details.
Solid state drive.
Yeah, and it was going to cost about $2,000.
Well, I mean, you're talking about a computer that had a solid state drive in it.
Yeah,
you're talking about. They come at different prices. You pay a premium to have the solid state drive. You get less storage for your money, but you get faster access to your data. Whether or not you need that in your day-to-day computing, I mean, if your husband's a lawyer, chances are he's working on documents and he's sending and receiving email and he's browsing the web and things like that. So the need for ultra-high speed is not very pressing for that. But on the other hand, storing lots of documents and images and that sort of stuff might be. So you can buy a laptop that has an SSD drive in it, and you can buy a similar laptop with a standard hard drive. And the similar laptop with a standard hard drive is going to have more storage and cost less money than the one that's similar that has an SSD drive. You're talking about, I think, the average SSD drive still is around 256 gigabytes.
240
mm-hmm. gigabytes. The standard non-SSD hard drive is usually anywhere from 500 gigabytes all the way up to a terabyte.
Okay.
So a lot more storage. So SSD is nice. I mean, certainly there's a lot of appeal to, like, double-clicking that icon and having it pop up almost instantly. But do you need that? So it becomes a question of you know, value for your dollar.
The price of SSDs has come down, so you can get for around $300, maybe a little less, the 240 gig. There are 500 and now 900 gig SSDs, but as they go up, the cost per gigabyte gets much, much bigger, and they get really pricey as they get larger. You could spend, I just bought a 1 terabyte drive this weekend, and it was $90.
For a non-SSD.
For a non-SSD.
What do you have now in the way of a computer?
Are you still... it's just an old computer. It's an old, it's an IBM.
It's an IBM?
That is old.
Yeah.
That is old. Any computer that, if you bought the cheapest laptop on the market today, I think you'd be blown away.
Okay.
So, that's why I say kind of, figure out what your budget is. You talked about you want lots of memory. I'm not sure whether you mean RAM memory for running applications or storage memory.
No, it was storage memory.
Right, storage memory. You're going to get more storage for your buck if you go with a non-SSD.
Standard hard drive.
Drive, yes. And I don't think you'll be, I don't think that there's enough of a performance difference between the two that for your purposes you would really notice.
Okay, great. Well, I really appreciate your advice. I love listening to your show.
Well, thank you for that, and have a good evening.
You too. Thank you again.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
All right. So we still have time.
A little bit. We got time for this call.
All right. Who's up?
All right. Up next, and possibly last on the show, we're going to speak with Kumal.
Kumal, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi. Actually, my name is Kunal. It's K-U-N-A-L.
Okay.
And my question is about the Samsung Galaxy Tab 2.
Okay.
So once I, like, take the pictures with the camera, all the pictures just go to the default tablet memory. And I have a 32-gigabyte card in there, the micro SD card.
Uh-huh.
So after taking the pictures, how do I transfer them to the card?
This is an Android.
Yes.
Can you, and you're using the default camera app?
Yes.
Is there an option to tell your camera app on the Android where to save the file when you take it?
I'm not asking Barrett, sorry.
I think there used to be, which, do you know which version of Android you're running? Is it real current? Like
Jelly
a
Bean.
Okay. Let's see. Let's go in the settings. I think there was a place that you could tell it to save them on the SD versus just the camera memory. But I would have to find where that is.
I looked in the settings, and it doesn't give me an option to transfer. I've Googled, and there was an option.
It would not be a situation where you would try to transfer the file once you've taken it. My thought would be is that there would be a way inside of the settings of the tablet to tell it that when you take the photo, it saves it to the alternative storage instead.
I think that setting was available in the one before Ice Cream Sandwich, I think Jelly Bean, but they don't have that option anymore in settings. So I don't know if there is a way.
Because other than that, wouldn't you have to get access directly to the file system on the Android? Do you still have to have a rooted device?
No. You can, where it's going to be storing the pictures, if you just connect it to USB, it'll automatically show up. You can say, hey, connect me as a USB mass storage device, and under Windows and under OS X, it'll just automatically grab the pictures. So you can still get to it.
What I was asking is, in order to do a file copy on the phone itself. I know that.
You don't have to. No, there's a few different file managers out there that, and you don't have to be rooted. But again, I'm using unlocked phones, so I don't.
But if you use, if you use an app that allowed you to get file access, you could go to the folder on the OneDrive that has the images, and then you could copy them. Could you do a copy that would send them to a folder on the other drive?
Yeah. Yeah,
you mean through the there's a option in on the tablet which has a folder icon and it says Explorer. I don't know if that's the one that I.
That's a file explorer. If you go to the Google Play Store, you can get ES File Explorer, or if you just Google for File Explorer and get something that's top rated and has that little Google Developers mark, that will get you there. You've got a lot of options. I've got 4 or 5 installed on my phone.
Okay.
But yeah, you can actually, you hold down, the file, and then the little menu will come up, and you can copy, you can move, you can do ranges.
So
you should be in good shape.
Without that option in the settings, I pretty much have to do it every time after my native memory gets full, right?
Well, that, or I would also go out and Google, because there might be some kind of application that does it for you, but go Google for Android, camera, phone, default, save location, or something along those. Just do an English search, but see how to change the default location under Android where those pictures get saved, because I bet there's a way to do it.
I bet you there is an option in the settings to save to the external drive.
Yeah, they moved it. I'm not seeing it, but I would be surprised if you couldn't do that.
Yeah. How big is your main storage?
Maybe 8 gigabytes.
Okay. You're shooting more than 8 gigs of photos at any given time?
No, but it's almost available in both less than, I think, 5 gigabytes.
Right.
And so it's almost up to only 2 gigabytes left. So
all right.
I take a lot of pictures. So
well, take a look around. You could probably change the default save location, and there's got to be a way to do it. I just believe there does. Anyway, we're out of time, and we got to get going because we're done. We got good quality from Pete. So we're going to try to do the news live next week, or are we going to
I think we'll try it.
Let's try it, because it sounds really good right now. I don't know what you did. I mean, I do know what you did, because you switched. You fixed it.
Well, also, as he said, the station has upbeefed its
but pipe. We didn't upbeef our methodology or something, because we were still using the Google Voice, whatever, right? All right, well, you've been listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's...
Groovehouse. We had 12 calls and I got one name wrong. Thank you. Good night.
Don't miss an Earth Day Houston Festival presented by Air Alliance Houston. Sunday, April 14th from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Discovery Green. Join KPFT at this free event celebrating our planet. Learn how to reduce, reuse, recycle, and respect our Earth. Join in family-friendly entertainment and see the latest in green consumer products at the Green Expo. Bring 5 single-use plastic shopping bags and trade them in for a reusable bag. So come party for our planet. Sunday, April 14th from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Discovery Green. Presented by Air Alliance Houston. For more details, visit EarthDayHouston.org. That's EarthDayHouston.org. You're listening to KPFT Houston.